Now coming on to what we're going to do about it. What can we possibly do about it? And as you, I'm sure you're aware, this is not easy. Anyway, so I've got 8 suggestions here of what we can do about it. And as I say earlier on, some of these you will want to just say rubbish. Others you want to say okay. So, but anyway, we will see. Here we are. 8 reasons. 8 things we can do about it. Suggestions for local churches. Realize the nature of the change that is required and put mission back at the church. Play down services, promote community. Develop a cohesive global mission structure. Remove the home field barrier. Minimize the things that marginalize mission. Maximize the things that integrate mission. Rethink the mission committee. Establish a gift audit. So those are basically going through. Whether we'll get through all of them, I'm not entirely sure. We'll see how fast I can speak. But the first thing to say is, number one, look, what we're talking about here is not an easy job. Okay, this is difficult. Changing any culture is difficult. Changing church culture is particularly difficult. You're not going to do this next week, all right? You're not going to do this next week. It's going to take a long time. I was telling the guys this morning that I know a church leader who's a brilliant church leader, very, 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 very gifted person as a leader and as a preacher and in so much. He's a fully qualified medical doctor. He's a fully qualified dentist. He worked for the NHS in administration for years. I mean, he is a top man in all sorts of areas, and he's a pastor of this church, and he changed it around pretty much. And I asked him one day, I said, Paul, how long did that take? 12 years, he said. And I thought, wow, if it took him 12 years, the rest of us don't stand a chance in 20. But anyway, we're looking at something really difficult here. We're trying to change a whole culture. We're trying to change what happens between the ears. And that is hugely, hugely difficult. And the first thing I think you probably follow from what I was saying, I mean, we actually do need to begin to play down this centrality of services. It's services that are the result, in a sense, of Christendom. We need to concentrate on community. How are you building community? Daily community with people. And these days with social media, and particularly things like WhatsApp, there are tremendous opportunities. And WhatsApp can work brilliantly in building community. I've seen it in my church in the last 2 years. And it is absolutely amazing. So that's one of the options. We need to see the church as an extended family. All right? The church is an extended family. All right. What do you do when you have a big extended family event? And you're good at that in Northern Ireland. You do a lot of these sort of things. So what happens? Who comes? When do they come? What do you do? Well, that's a picture of what the church should be like. Thirdly, avoid this word service. I was going to a church one, and we never had services. We had gatherings. We gathered. We gathered to worship, we gathered to be taught, we gathered to eat, we gathered to do business, we gathered to do this, we gathered to that, we gathered. Wrong, we actually had one service a year, and that was a carol service. All right? But no other services, everything was a gathering. And we use that word all the time, get it into people's heads. It's a gathering. Okay, arrange your seating. I know you're restricted in terms of space and all that sort of thing these days. And if you've got huge numbers of people coming in limited seat, you've got to squash them all in. But I do think that rows, where we sit looking at the neck of the person in front, that rows shout of Christendom. And we need to do something about changing the start your gatherings with refreshments. Now, this is something that happened in a church I went to. Which was absolutely revolutionary. We had our event, and afterwards we have refreshments, and I expect most of you do the same, yeah? And then once somebody said, why don't we have refreshments at the beginning? And I tell you, it was mind-blowing. The change was immediate. The whole attitude to our event, to people coming together, changed. Totally changed. People came in, picked up a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, started talking to people, wandered around, talking to somebody else, and eventually people gathered and some music was played and we actually got going on what we were doing. But it changed the whole feel of the thing and made it less like a service. And that was something that we did. Don't start on time. You don't start extended family events on time. If you say to your family, come around up at 7, well, that's roughly when the food's going to be ready and that sort of thing, but you don't mind if they turn up at 1:15 or 1:15, really, do you? You're an extended family. And I think that's important. I could say more about that as well. and break it up when you can. I know in England a lot of times these days when people are preaching, they sometimes stop and say, you know, turn to your partner or the person next to you or person in front of you and ask and discuss this or discuss that, and then they get back into the preach. And they break it up a bit. That's very good. And again, something to do. And you won't like this one. You disagree with this. Cancel Sunday gathering occasionally. We know that in the church that I was at, in the elders stood up one morning and said, we're not meeting next week. The place will be locked up. There's nobody here. Don't come. We want you to go out and meet non-Christians. It was summer, you see. So they said, we want you to go out and meet non-Christians. Go down to the park. Go to the gym. Go to the mall. Go wherever you like. But go and meet non-Christians. And the advantage of that was twofold. First of all, we met non-Christians, which a lot of Christians sometimes find difficult to do. But the second thing was, we were making the point that the Sunday morning meeting together was not the be-all and end-all of Christianity. It was not the be-all and end-all of knowing Jesus. But actually, if we have missed it, I suppose we did it twice a year or something. So, I mean, it didn't drastically affect the teaching program of the church or anything like that. But it just made a statement that this gathering that we have, which we call service very often, is not the be-all and end-all of what church is all about. Anyway, sorry, let's move on. So we need to we need to change the majors. Okay. Thirdly, develop a cohesive global mission vision strategy. Now, it starts off with defining mission. What is mission? You probably need to do some work on that. There's been this very helpful, how many of you have heard of the 5 marks of mission? Oh, good. Quite a few of you have heard of them. It's really good. Really good. If you go on the internet, go on to Google and put in 5 marks of mission, and there's a lot of good stuff coming up. It was started, I think, in the Anglican Church in England in about the mid-1980s or something, but it's been adopted now by all sorts of people, not just Anglicanism, by all sorts of things. But there are these 5 marks of mission: to proclaim the good news of the kingdom, to teach, baptize, and nurture new believers, to respond to the human need by loving service, to speak, to seek to transform unjust structures of society, and to strive to safeguard the integrity of creation and sustain and renew the life of the earth. The 5 marks of mission: tell, teach, treasure, transform, and tend, if you like. But it's brilliant. It's really good. I haven't got time to go through all this, but these are just some of the references that back it all up. You can have this PowerPoint later on because Neil's got it. So these are all the passages in the Bible that back up all these things. I haven't got time to go through them. But it's so important, these 5 marks of mission. Now, some people say they're all equally important. All important and all equally important. Other Christians say, well, they're all important, but number one is particularly important. No, that's fine. I don't mind if you say that. I don't mind which case it is, as long as you accept they're all important. And you as a church, you're not going to be involved in all of them all the time. There are going to be certain times where you concentrate on this and concentrate on that. And of course there are. But you need, as a church, to think through, you know, when did we last do anything to think about justice? When did we last do anything to think about the planet and what we do in the planet? Because it's all part of mission. That's all very important. Which of these is mission? Well, I'm not going to let you even look it through, really, because basically the answer is all of them are mission. They're all mission. So we need to begin to ask these questions in our churches. These are key questions that we need to ask in our churches. And when you ask questions, you always start with a question that's easy to answer, all right? Never start with a difficult question. Always start with an easy question, something that's got an obvious answer to it, yes? So you start by saying, are we happy with the world the way it is? Okay? Are people in your church happy with the way the world is? No, they're not, right? Okay, how would they like to see it change? I mean, they'd like to see it change in lots and lots of ways, but particularly, what's keenly affecting them? What would they really like to see? What do they think the most important change would be? Okay, do you think God is interested in that change? And do you think God wants them to be involved in making a difference? That's the third question. Fourth question is, what resources have you got as a church that God could use to begin to make a change? People, finance, facilities, all sorts of things. And then, fifth question is very important too. You're not going to be able to do it on your own. Who are you going to partner with to make that change? And that's so important. It's all about owning mission, the ownership of mission. And the second part of my book that we can't deal with today is about that ownership of mission. Because ownership of mission has been taken away from the church by the agencies. And we've got to put that ownership of mission back into the church. So it's no point in PCI just coming along and saying you should be doing this. Please tick this, and pay this money. No, it's a matter of your congregation asking these questions. Okay? What does God want us to do? How does God want us to make a difference? Right? They need to own it. It's what God wants them to do for him. And I think that's really extremely important. Now, where have we got to here? I've got my sheets in the wrong order here. Yeah, that's bad news. Okay. Fourthly, is do try and remove this home field barrier. You're an island country. I live in island country. There's a problem being an island country. It means overseas really is overseas. And we've got to get that out of our thinking. Because overseas is something which has got into the missionary think, and we've got to remove it. There is no difference. Mission starts at the end of the pew and goes to the ends of the earth. Right? And we've got to work at that in lots of different ways. It's interesting, isn't it? We've got to remove this us and them mentality. It's based on colonialism, where it was us and them. We told them what to do. And that's gone. We've got to get away from that. We've got to get away from the us and them community. That's what, personally, I feel so sad about the whole Brexit thing. It's creating an us and them community. And that's the biggest, well, one of the reasons and the biggest reasons why I was so against Brexit, because no, we don't want to be an us and them. We want to be us with Europe and further afield. And the church certainly has got to develop that. Let's get away from this barrier. And we need to actually begin to, we're going to move on from that one. We need to find ways of doing that. And there are lots and lots of ways of doing that. just remember that world mission is quite often a turn-off phrase to a lot of people these days. Use something else. Talk about something else. Get young people in your church to do something on world music. World music is a big thing these days. Well, let's have some world music and in all sorts of areas. Then set a map up and look at all the labels on your clothes of places where the fabric was grown, put together, sold, whatever, you know. And it'll cover the world. Okay, we need to begin to bring everything that's global. And of course, we can do this so easier today, much more easier today than they ever could in the past, because of the internet and because of all that sort of thing. It's amazing. We actually need to receive workers as well as send workers. How much are you listening to the global church? How much are you listening to the global church? I'm going to a conference on it this year, which is going to be very exciting. And I went to a church a little while ago, a few years ago now, actually, and they were saying, oh, we're really struggling as a church with evangelism. We can't do evangelism. We've done Bible studies on it. We've done courses on it. We've done this on it. We've tried really hard, but we really cannot get out there and evangelize people. It doesn't seem to work. And I said, have you thought about bringing a Brazilian Christian across and joining your staff for a year? No. But actually, Brazilians are good at evangelism. They may not be good at too many other things, some other things, but they're really good at evangelism. Get a Brazilian Christian onto your staff for a year. And you'll change your whole idea about evangelism and all that sort of thing. But we need to learn from the global church. And when things happen in around the world, do you relate onto it? How many of you, I mean, was it a month ago now? Chinese New Year? How many of you celebrated or mentioned Chinese New Year in your church a month ago? Well done. Great. I mean, how sad. How many billion people in China who are celebrating? And we can celebrate with them. I mean, all those sort of things. And there's so much news that's coming in about this coronavirus and all these sort of things. And are we praying for Italy these days? Are you going to be praying for Italy on Sunday because of this virus? I hope you are. Let's be part of this global church. Where have we got to now? 38. Okay, number 5. This is where things get a bit difficult here, really, I suppose. We need to close down or minimize anything that marginalizes global mission. You see, what Christendom did was to take mission completely out of the church. It was not necessary anymore because everybody had to become a Christian, okay? So over the centuries, we've brought mission back a little bit. So we brought mission back so it's on the edge. It's something we do occasionally when we think of it. But it's marginalized. It's on the edge. So what we've got to do is we've got to begin to minimize anything that marginalizes global mission. Now, I don't know what the missionary prayer meeting is like in your church. Maybe it's brilliant. Maybe you've got loads of teenagers at it and all sorts of things. And that sort of, I don't know. But I know I've been to lots and lots of missionary prayer meetings there are four or five old ladies, younger than me, but old ladies the same. And they pray every week or every month. And they would love young people to come and join them. But there's no chance that young people ever, ever going to join them. It's just not going to happen. You want to close it down. You won't stop those women praying, but you need to close it down as the official prayer meeting of the church, because it's giving the wrong message. It's giving the wrong message to the church as a whole. Rethink the missionary weekend. Do you have a missionary weekend? One in every 52 weeks, you think about mission. That's what it communicates, isn't it? One in every 52 weeks, you think about mission. Oh, come on. Do away with it. Bring it in. Okay, do away with traditional mission communications. Those missionary prayer letters that stay at the back of your church and nobody picks them up and they get dog-eared. Or the missionary notice board, you don't have those saggy things to people's pictures, do you? I hope you don't. I expect that's long since gone. But anyway, I can still remember where they were there. And it needs to go. It needs to go. You've got to change all that. Rethink the mission and beware of the mission enthusiast. Do you know, people steer well clear of the eager, intense, persistent, single-interest enthusiast. And in terms of the missionary, in terms of mission, that person is quite often the retired missionary, I'm afraid. And these are lovely people, but I think the unhelpful enthusiast looks back and knows what it was like, gets information from limited Christian sources, concentrates on the detail, hasn't the big picture. Unhelpful enthusiasm. Nothing wrong with enthusiasm. Nothing wrong with enthusiasm. It's just how the enthusiasm works out. Looks forward, gets information from a broader range of sources, thinks positively about new trends, has seen things for themselves recently. We need to get more young people onto our groups. And we need to get the people who stand up and say things, not the professionals. I always think in a church that if you've got a message to say about finance, if you're short of money, you need more finance, you get more. Don't get the treasurer to do it. Because everybody knows it's his job. They'll say, oh, he's doing his thing. Get somebody else to do it. Get a young person to do it. I had a young person in my church, not my current church, because I'm only in that church. But this young person did this thing on World Mission, and she got up and a couple of things she said actually were wrong, but didn't matter. She came up. People listened to every word she said, and it was great. She was enthusiastic about the meeting that was going to happen, and we were going to do this and the other, and people turned up. It was. It was really good. So get the right people involved in things and make it the young people. People in their early 20s, people in their teens. Get them doing things because they'll make a difference. People will listen. Okay, where do I got to? Oh, yes, beware the mission enthusiast. We've done that bit. Okay, right. Maximize the things that integrate mission into every aspect of the church. Minimize the things that put people off. Maximize the things that... And most of these things, a lot of these things, relate to the internet. I'm interested to the fact that I haven't seen any of you sitting there with your phones out. Now... That's very interesting. You've got your phone on. Okay. Now, I guarantee that if this crowd had been late teens and early 20s, they would all have their phones out. they would be checking up on Google about facts of what I've said. They will be looking at this and they'll be looking at that. And they may be chatting to a friend as well, but that's okay. You know, the internet is just so good at giving us the information we need. We have a lodger in our house. She's 25, and she's been with us for a little while. And whenever there is a question about anything, almost before we've asked the question, she's Googled and come up with the answer. That's just the way she is. And that's just the way the young people are generally. And that's the world we live in. And that has tremendous opportunities for world mission. You need to get these people onto your committees, not as individuals, no, as small groups, and help them to really go. How are we doing? Need to go quickly. Right. Okay, where have we got to? 5, 6, seven. Yeah. Choose someone at the beginning of the week. Choose the young people at the beginning of the week and say to them, look, what do you think is going to be the main issue in the news this week? Can you find out about it in Reporters on Sunday? I mean, and they'll do a brilliant job. Anyway, let's let me rethink the missionary. Missionary committees basically have two jobs to do, most of them do. Their job is to maintain link with workers and to promote world mission interest in the church, right? Two things they have to do. Now, I think those things should be separated. First of all, I think the first part, the link with mission workers, needs to be linked with other things relating to those in the church that receive money. So that you need to form some sort of human resources, personnel committee, or whatever you want to call it, which looks after all those in the church that receive money from the mission budget somehow or other. Now, that includes the staff, includes the caretaker, it includes the organist if he's paid, it includes all sorts of people, it includes also the mission workers. The advantage is that it removes this home field divide and it brings the world into the life of the church. So I think that's one thing that you, and then the other thing that I think you need to do is you need to set up, you need to set up what I call a world issue committee. World issue committee. There are loads and loads and loads of world issues, which young people particularly are interested in. We've seen it recently, haven't we, in terms of the environment. And the demonstrations that have gone on, and the kids that have taken time off school. I mean, whether you think that's a good idea or not, what it shows is that these are young people who are passionately interested in world issues. Now, is God interested in those same world issues? Yes, he is. Yes, he is. These guys, these young people need to be told God's interested as well. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? We need to encourage their interest and commitment. We need to ask whether God is interested. And we need to say, are the Christians involved in this? Are they? How are they affected by this? And how can we help and support them? So all these issues, and you saw about 15, 20 of them fly up there just now, and there are far more. Okay, God's interested in these things. What can we do about it? What can we do to help Christians in that situation? Now, it may well be that you just have a night praying about it. Or it may be that you take a collection and send off a gift somewhere. Or it may be that you actually get involved over a period of a few months on it. Depends on, this is again, young people. Get young people involved in these things. Come on, fiddling. Okay, and finally, I do think that you need to think about a gift audit in your church. Remember the words from Acts 13? This is the church at Antioch. While they were worshipping the Lord and fasting, the Holy Spirit said, set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work that I have called them to, so that so after they fasted and prayed, they placed their hands on them and sent them off. Did Paul and Barnabas come to the church and say, we think we ought to go as missionaries? No. The church, under the influence of the Holy Spirit, said to Paul and Barnabas, do you think you might consider going? Now, I think in our churches, the volunteer system is not good. The volunteer system, I think, is unchristian. We have to volunteer to be willing. But what we do should be based on gift. God gives us gifts. All of us, God gives us gifts. We need to be serving in the church and in the world and everywhere according to our gifting. And our church leaders need to know our gifting so that they can approach us and say, we want you to do this, or we want you to do that, or we want you to go overseas, or whatever it is. So you need to, I think every church needs to have some sort of gift already. Now, that doesn't mean you go out to people and give them a sheet of paper and say, write down your gifts. Because actually, some people think they've got gifts where they actually haven't got gifts. Maybe. And there are other people who don't think they've got any gifts at all and actually have quite some good gifts. Yeah? So you can start by getting them to put down what they think their gifts are, but then it needs to come alongside them with a friend or with an elder or with someone from their home group or whatever, to go through and actually work out their gifting. So that, I mean, ideally, so you have a list of everybody in the church and what their gifts are. So that when something needs to be done, again, whether it's overseas or whether it's here, whether it's during the week, whether it's on Sunday, whatever it is, church leaders can look through and say, oh, yeah, they could do that, or maybe they could do that. Let's approach them and see if they're interested. Gifting is so important. I went around lots of churches and they would say, we would say, we're supporting a missionary here, and a missionary set out for this church. And I say, why? Why? Oh, well, they offered. And I think, oh yeah, well that's good. But you sent them because they offered? Come on. And, you know, that's not the way it should work. It should work when the Holy Spirit puts on them. Anyway, okay, so here we are. Those are 8 suggestions. So you've got another 10 minutes to... And the question is, which of these do you think you could try in your church? Modified, if you like, but maybe you don't think any of them. Don't know. But think of those things. What of those things do you think you could think about doing in your church? Okay, I think you've got 10 minutes before Neil jumps up and does something else.